welcome to episode 139 of Speak Beastie for November 28th, 2021. I'm Amy.
I'm Anne.
I'm Helene.
And I'm Marjolaine.
Yay, I'm back.
Yay, welcome back. How was your excellent adventure?
It was fantastic, of course. No, it was really, really nice. For those who don't know, I was in London and in the UK because actually I was not only in London, and I met Oreo. It was super cool. I did a lot of really, really cool things. And lot of content, I think, for the Common Room and for Patreon, I think, for the following weeks.
It looks like you guys had so much fun. I was looking at the pictures. I was like, oh, I want to be there.
I know, so jealous.
It was really, really cool. And I did some adventure of my own, too. I went to the Forbidden Forest experience. I don't know if you heard about that, but it was really, really cool.
Oh, Lane posted about that. Former Common Room member / social media person, Lane.
Yes.
She posted about that, too. It looked amazing.
Oh, yeah. It was really, really cool. Lot of fantastic beasts. So, yeah. Really, really nice. It's an outdoor experience through a very nice forest, and you have lots of effects, sound effects, light effects. You see unicorn, you see centaurs, cast a Patronus. It's really, really nice.
Oh, that's so nice. Cool.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, sounds super cool. Well, if you are a patron, then you'll be able to experience all of Marjolaine's excellent adventure content coming up. And speaking of our patrons, we sure would like to thank this week's Patreon supporter, who is Susan S. Thank you so much for your support. We appreciate you. Literally couldn't do it without you.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs knees. And how.
Heck yeah. Perform it. Perform the Phoenix Register for us, please.
Okay, hang on, let me grab my skull.
To Phoenix or not to Phoenix?
That is the Alas! Poor Theseus. I knew him, Horatio. That's not even the quote. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Will. I'm so sorry. Anyway, speaking of theater, Cursed Child has reopened.
Wait, that was
and
a great transition.
And apparently Scorbus is now canon? Question mark, question mark?
Sorry, I'm still in all over it. How amazing that transition was, but yes.
Really good at segues, and I will not have anyone disparaging that.
You asked for a performance. She's pulling out all the stops.
It was great.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you. There is a Twitter thread. I will link this in the show notes. Someone whose Twitter name, @FaithNoMore, tweeted about the changes that have been made, specific script changes, not acting choices. For instance, Scorpius realized that I'm doing this for Albus instead of Snape suggesting it in the Patronus scene.
Yeah.
Delphi torturing Scorpius with Crucio. She called Albus's weakness love, not friendship. She looked directly at Scorpius and said love. I haven't seen Cursed Child, so none of this means anything to me.
I think the most, there is a lot of evidence that she pointed. Because actually, that all these changes was possible because now it's only one part. Yeah, it's the short version. So they rewrote some part, and it looks like they took advantage of that to make it more obvious that, yeah, Scorpius and Albus are in love, and that's awesome.
It is awesome. Yeah. I'm really happy about that.
It's just
because I feel like the internet has been yelling about this for years now.
Yeah.
So
it's nice when they actually like listen to what fans want.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's fans, but it's also actors, because I remember interviews from the original cast, and I remember that they explicitly said that they were playing that Scorpius was in love with Albus, and so that's really nice that's now in the text.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how people really read this anyway from the original, and how just small changes can really just kind of make it all the more obvious.
Well, yeah, the fact that it only took small changes means that it really was subject.
It was already
there.
However, I will point out that not everybody is super like excited about this change, and the fact that like it's still kind of considered queer baiting in some aspects, and a lot of people are saying it's too little, too late. Kind of just like, you know, after all of 7 Harry Potter books had come out, then finally like saying that Albus Dumbledore was gay, just kind of, you know, like. The representation, I'm glad that it's there, but, you know, it would be nice for any of it to have been, like, included from the start.
Yeah, for it to have been there, as you said, organically from the beginning.
Yeah.
As opposed to after they had to shut down for... Because, look, everyone knows I'm a big Disney fan, but I also understand that Disney's a corporation. And the reason they do a lot of progression and inclusion is because it'll make them more money.
Yeah.
And I'm not pretending, part of the reason I'm sure they're doing this is one for inclusion, one for progression, but also because they need a way to stir up publicity and word of mouth after being closed for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
This is going to make them buckets of money.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, I think since we are waiting for Fantastic Beasts 3, where hopefully we will have more explicitly something between... Mm-hmm. Albus and Gellert, so yeah, I think that's a good sign that we are heading to that direction.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Better than the opposite direction. That's for
truth. All right, next up, in questionably canonical news, the Wizards Unite, the mobile game, will be officially ending as of January 31st. It will be removed from app stores. Players will no longer be able to make in-game purchases starting December 6th, and there still will be events for players to take part in November and December. Are any of y'all still playing Wizards Unite?
Once in a while, I pop in. You know, I'm really kind of sad about this because I feel like I didn't get the opportunity to play it when everyone was playing it, and that was what the experience was, because my phone was so old when this came out that I couldn't play it. And then by the time I got a new phone that would, like, do everything correctly, no one else was playing it anymore.
Yeah, so, plus it's kind of unfortunate to have a game like this during a pandemic too. Mm-hmm. Like, no one's going outside and like walking around during lockdown, so
yeah,
like Pokemon Go would not have had the success it had if it had come out during the pandemic. And I'm pretty sure Wizards Unite came out before the pandemic, but it came in 2018 or 2019, but like, the reason they're probably shutting down now is I'm guessing they just, like, didn't make any money for the last 2 years.
Yeah, it probably was tough because it came out in summer 2019 because I remember playing it at MystyCon. But, again, my phone kept freezing while everyone else was finding things. But, yeah, that's tough. Sad.
Yeah, I remember that it required too much data for my for my phone, and yeah, it was I tried to, but I remember it came out during a big heat wave, and it was super hard to go outside to play it.
Yeah.
But I tried, but yeah, and my phone was I couldn't have some of the things that you could have, and I don't remember if it was the port key or something like that, and because something wasn't working in my phone, and so yeah, I got discouraged very quickly. But still sad for the few people who were still playing, because even if it was not a lot of people, I feel then that I can understand that it must be something really sad to see a game going.
Even if it's so sad to see it go, because there is a passionate fan base out there, and it was a neat concept, even if it wasn't always pulled off.
Yeah.
Fantastically.
Mm-hmm. Well, as one game leaves, another one enters.
Beautiful, Helene. See, now you are a segue master.
She's learning from the best.
I am.
Yes. So the Hogwarts Legacy release date was supposed to be released in 2023. Now there are rumors it could be released at the end of 2022 in time for the holiday season marketing and in the same year of Secrets of Dumbledore. So that would be some excellent synergy, since this is supposed to be, I think it's like supposed to be around the time that Dumbledore's at Hogwarts, right?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. That would be, especially if they're doing like the Blu-ray release around the same time, like the home video streaming release around the same time, that would be some really good synergy.
Yeah, definitely. Because you just have the brand really out there and being marketed, so it has a big presence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just want it to come out as soon as possible. I'll play it tomorrow, you know? Like, I want it.
Yeah, I don't have something to play this kind of game. I will have to invest in some...
It's coming out on like every single platform.
It's coming out on PC,
yeah,
right?
But you still have platforms? I don't have any PlayStation, or I don't know what it, and my PC is not strong enough to handle this kind of game, so I don't know how I will manage to play it, but it will not be accessible to everyone.
Well, I have this fancy gaming laptop, and right now I literally only use it to play The Sims. So I'm sure it'll be glad to have something to add that'll actually ask something of it. All right, last but certainly not least, the Harry Potter exhibition tickets are now on sale for the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia. That is starting February 18th. That will feature props, costumes, and other items from the films in an immersive environment. Guests will be able to pick their house and wand at the start of the exhibit, and then they'll go on a personalized journey through 10 areas that include the Great Hall and the Forbidden Forest. And Amy, you've got a note here about some behind-the-scenes goodness?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that they actually hired people who worked on the theme parks, the Universal theme parks, to help with the props and set dressing. May or may not have interviewed one of these people for MuggleNet, and she told me about this, so what? It's legit, and it's going to look really cool, and I really want to go.
Did any of you go to this when it was touring the first time?
Yes.
Yes.
This sounds really cool, though. I like how they've made it, like, you can choose your house and stuff. Like, that's
really cool. They didn't have that the last time.
Yeah. It's really cool. Actually, even if it's the Harry Potter exhibition, they announced that they will have some Fantastic Beasts content and even some Cursed Child content too. So
that's cool.
That's cool, yeah.
It sounds like it's more of like an experience and a little more immersive than the first time around. So that's pretty cool.
Well, that's it for the Phoenix Register.
There was a lot there, so... All of the owls in the whole world mysteriously disappeared today. That's the big news story. They're all gone. And we're hoping that they'll show up.
Yeah,
soon.
I was about to send one because I listened to the last episode today, because actually we were recording quite early this time, so I'm not surprised that we don't have reaction from the last episode. But yeah, and I wasn't in the last two episodes, and the last one is still fresh on my mind. It was absolutely, I loved it. I loved the Captain America comparison with Theseus. That was amazing, and that was great.
Actually, just out of curiosity, everyone literally knows who my favorite member of the squad is. Who are y'all's favorite members of the new squad?
I would have to say Leda.
Yeah, but... I'm in the team that I don't think we will see her again, so I'm not. I mean,
well, Marjo, don't tell in, Anne. First of all, you're in the wrong team, Marjo. You're wrong.
Yep.
Hashtag Lita lives.
Thank you.
So the episode came out today on recording day, everybody, and I have not been able to listen to it yet. I started this morning, but like, can you clarify who the team is? New squad.
New squad is Yusuf, Lita, Theseus, and Nagini.
Oh, 100% Lita.
Yeah, no, I think it's Theseus for me.
Nice. So we got an even spread between the cutest couple. Second cutest couple, because, I mean, Nutina is right there.
But
I don't know what their ship name is. Would that be, like, Thalita? Ah. Theta?
Letheus?
Letheus? I don't know.
Letheus? Letheus?
It just sounds like you have a lisp.
Letheus. I did have a lisp growing up. I had to go to speech therapy.
And I just wanted to add that to add more argument for Yusuf Kama maybe becoming a spy, I have a bonus content on Patreon about Kama that have really interesting bits that are that could be totally awesome for Kama becoming a spy. So.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, intriguing.
When a crime breaks out, all the cute girls shout, he's the good-looking guy. Sorry. That's what it reminded me of. If anyone's seen Boy Meets World.
So we'll cover the owls from episodes 138 and 139 next episode.
So make sure you get them in. Let us give us all your thoughts on the new squad and... Oh, what's today's topic?
Stay tuned.
Yeah, so I guess we can move to our main discussion today. Because we have a new squad, but we will definitely have new location for the next movie. And yeah, we recently learned that we will see new countries. In Secret of Dumbledore, and one of them that we didn't expect it is Bhutan. So I think we need to be prepared and learn more about this country before the movie.
Wait,
so
sorry, before you get into it, can you remind me and the listeners where we learned this? Where did we learn this?
Yeah, we learned that after a press a festival that was in Spain where they shown some footage from behind the scenes, and we have a report from that quoting different countries that the movie will go through, and we learned that we will see, of course, the UK, the US, China, Germany, and Bhutan.
Awesome. Okay.
And no mention of Brazil, so that's
interesting.
Brazil, who? I don't know. Her.
Ignore all of those episodes. They never happened.
Hey, we still have two movies left. I mean,
yeah.
Refer to those episodes in the future, I'm sure.
Brazil, Bhutan, they both start with B.
Yeah, that's two very different countries.
No, they're the same.
They have the same number of letters, I'm pretty sure.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. Yes, they do.
No, so they don't.
Yeah, Bhutan, that's six. Brazil, that's six.
Oh, yeah. True.
So they're basically the same country.
We okay, don't claim except- her, listeners.
Except that they're not, and that's the point of our main discussion today.
Obviously, I'm joking. Please don't come at me. Either Bhutan or Brazil, I promise I'm joking.
So, to add more argument that Bhutan is not Brazil, I will give you some introduction about this country. And so, first, what is this country and where it is? So, Bhutan is actually a small country in the heart of the Himalayas between India and Tibet, just east of Nepal. And it's about the size of Switzerland, so much smaller than Brazil. And for US folks, it's a bit larger than Maryland. That's the comparison that I found.
Oh. I didn't realize that Switzerland was that size.
That's tiny.
That's why I looked for a US comparison because I thought, yeah.
Because we're European dummies folks, when it comes to geography.
We don't know how big Switzerland is.
But but in the size of Switzerland, Bhutan has only the population of Washington, D.C. So not a lot of people in this area.
I mean, D.C. is pretty heavily populated, but for a country... I was going to ask,
like, are we talking just D.C. proper or the D.C. metro area?
I don't know.
Probably, hang on, I'm Googling it.
I'm guessing D.C. Metro area, but
Bhutan is much larger than just Washington, D.C., so that's just to give you an idea of... there is... I don't remember how many people by kilometers. I don't know how you said but that not a lot of people. And actually, it's one of the most greenest countries in the world with 70% of the land covered by forests. So it gives you also an idea that a lot of the country is pretty wild and empty of people. I saw that they even have a world record of from 2015 of the largest number of trees planted in 1 hour. I don't know.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah,
they plant a lot of trees.
That's okay. A little lack of people.
Real quick. So it is the approximately the population of actual DC proper.
Oh.
So the DC metro area has a population of about 6 million people, 6.1 million people. But D.C., the city, has 692,683 as of 2019, Bhutan has 771,612 people as of 2020.
They don't even have a million people in their country?
Nope. Yeah. It's a very... It's small.
Wow.
Yes.
Interesting.
Okay, sorry. Carry on.
So Bhutan is also known as the land of the thunder dragon.
Ooh.
And it has this mighty dragon on its flag. That's the dragon country, the dragon land.
But it's rad.
Yeah, and that I think that's the only reason why this country, it could be the only reason why this country has its place in the Fantastic Beasts series.
They're like, that flag, yes.
Yes.
It is a very cool flag, if anyone's Googled it. Like, it's real cool looking.
Yeah.
I'm looking it up now. I gotta see it. Ah, nice.
And we'll link this in the show notes too, listeners, so you'll be able to see exactly how cool this flag is.
Yeah.
What is he holding?
He's holding a pearl that are a symbol of prosperity. So, yeah.
Neat!
And and speaking of dragon, it's a monarchy, and the king in Bhutan are known as the Dragon King. So, that's cool too.
Dang.
And... So yeah, it's a monarchy, and it was an absolute monarchy until 2008 when they had their first democratic election. So it's now a constitutional monarchy, and the capital is Thimphu. So that's the basic stuff you need to know about Bhutan.
That's cool.
That's more than I knew before.
But you may also have heard about Bhutan. At least that's the reason why I first heard about this country before, for its gross national happiness. And it's actually a philosophy conceptualized by King Jimmy Tsingwi Wangchuck in the 70s. And because it was to conceptualize that we need to evaluate the progress of a country and the wealth of the country through the well-being of its people and not through an economic point of view. So that was a very interesting concept that is now included in the international conceptualization of progress. And but it came from Bhutan first. And it's even part of the constitution in Bhutan now. Hmm. And it should be the goal of their government. So very, very nice idea. But I wanted to make a side note because when I did my research for this episode, it certainly makes Bhutan sound like a paradise. And it's not, actually. At least not for everyone. And some specialists and observers describe a politic which is obsessed with purity ideology to protect the country. It's very close and it has very harsh restriction for the population. And they also have a very problematic way to handle Nepalese refugees. So basically, when you are not pure Bhutanese and you come from Nepalese, which is a large part of the country, you are not a citizen and you are you don't have the same rights as the other people from the country. So I wanted to say that because it's not really well known and I wanted to address that.
You know, I was going to say that sounds really great and then it turns out it still sucks. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nationalism for sure.
Yeah. Very weird version of nationalism, but definitely a strong one.
Yeah. That's sad.
Yeah. But it's still... a nice country with very nice ideas that are important for the whole world. So that's an important country still, even if it's tiny. And so what about Bhutan in the 30s? So when the movie will take place. So it was already a monarchy at this time. And it was under the British Empire protectorate because, you know, it was the grand time of the British Empire. And Bhutan got its independence in 1949, so just after India. And yeah, at this time, Bhutan was and actually still is very isolated from the rest of the world. And I didn't find any major historical event during the timeline of the movies. But I think it's so remote from the rest of the world that it's probably the perfect place to have a wild, spectacular adventure that will absolutely not affect the statute of secrecy because nobody will pay attention to what's happening in Bhutan. So I don't know how they will handle the political background, but I think they can ignore it, I think. So what does Bhutan look like? It's absolutely gorgeous. I encourage you to Google it. It's really, really beautiful. It's these dramatic Himalayas, mountains, landscapes, lots of forest, like I said earlier. And the emblematic elements of the landscape are the Dzong, and it's the Buddhist fortress monastery. It's a really beautiful castle with white walls and red and gold roof.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they are always in this beautiful landscape in the mountains. And that's really impressive. And there are Dzong in every of the 20 districts. So we should at least see one on screen, I think, to identify that we are in Bhutan. So yeah, you can expect this kind of a thing in the background. Or maybe they will go to the Dzong, I don't know, but... So why will we have Bhutan in Fantastic Beasts? I think the main reason is that it's probably a country full of Fantastic Beasts, actually. And I will not expand on that because I think we have a lot of occasion with Bhutan to do several newt cases. But we have the four guardians or the four auspicious beasts of Buddhism that we can find everywhere in Bhutanese art. So it's these four gods basically that are very important for the culture. So it's the dragon, the Garuda, who is a god who looks like a bird, the tiger and the snow lion. So, and I think it's interesting to have again four animals like the four houses in Hogwarts, in Ilvermorny.
Huh.
That's, it's interesting.
Nice.
So I don't know if you will have, or maybe, yeah, the dragon is, I think we need a dragon if we go to Bhutan, but we'll see.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And the other one, maybe it would be other fantasy beasts that we have a link to the other four guardians, but I'm not sure. And I found another strange coincidence. in the national bird in Bhutan, which is a raven. And yeah, we already have a lot of symbolic around raven with the Lestrange, with Corvus Lestrange, mm-hmm. and that's obviously the symbol of the Lestrange family. So does it mean something? Probably not, but yeah, that's
interesting.
That's a cool coincidence.
That is very interesting. There's a lot of things here that feel like they would be pulling together to make interesting story elements.
Yeah,
maybe. And probably the first thing that we are excited about in Speak Beastie is the Yeti, because the Yetis are very real in Bhutan.
They're real everywhere.
Yes, but over there they don't question its existence. They have a lot of evidence that they have Yetis in Bhutan.
That's awesome. And
they call them Migoy. And they even have a wildlife sanctuary for them. It's the Saktang Wildlife Sanctuary. So it's a place where you have laws that you are not allowed to hunt the Yetis, and they are allowed to walk around freely in this area. So, yeah.
So you can see them there?
Sorry?
You can see them there walking around?
I mean, they have a lot of stories around Yetis, but there are so many stories that I think we should do a news case all about Yetis in Bhutan, because they have a lot of cool stuff, like an enormous, gigantic Yeti in the landscape that is still you can still see in the landscape, forming a mountain or lake, I don't remember, but that's the Yetis are everywhere. So I think the question now is what kind of adventure we want for Newt in Bhutan, apart meeting Yetis.
Like you said, I definitely want to see a dragon. Like, I feel like we're really missing that in Fantastic Beasts. That would be like the first thing that I would think we would see.
I want to see a Yeti.
Yeah. And the Yeti. I want to see the dragon and the Yeti throw down in their own Battle of the Beasts.
Cool.
Who would win? We don't know enough about Yetis yet to make that determination. But
yeah, but I don't know why they will end up in Bhutan. Will they have a mission, or will it be just Newt having a beast-related thing to do in Bhutan? And so, yeah.
I mean, sounds like it'd be, like, really nice scenery and, like, just visually very cinematic.
It feels like, I know we've discussed for Brazil, kind of a 30s Indiana Jones kind of feeling for the adventure. I feel like that'd be pretty easy to transplant to Bhutan, especially with all the forests. Mm-hmm. You've still got the gang going through densely treed areas looking for beasts, potentially.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I was thinking about a plot point that will make them decide to go there. But yeah, maybe it's just a beast-related thing that... Yeah, because I think we expect Newt to go on mission for Dumbledore in this movie. Mm-hmm. So why Dumbledore will need Newt to go in Bhutan?
It's a secret. Secrets of Dumbledore.
Oh!
One more secret.
Can never have too many.
The last secret, where are we going?
So that's all I have for Bhutan for now. But like I said, I think we have a lot of inspiration for future news case. And maybe not Time Turner, because I didn't find anything about history in Bhutan. But
That was a wonderful primer, though. Thank you. I know I didn't really know anything about Bhutan. My experience with the Himalayas pretty much begins and ends at Expedition Everest in Animal Kingdom at Disney World.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
So this was really informative.
Yeah.
Oh, and I just wanted to add, because I know as fans, we like to do travel themed around places connected to the movies, but it will be really hard to go to Bhutan because they have a very strict touristic policies, and you basically have to be a millionaire to go to Bhutan because you have to pay a lot per day to be allowed to visit this country. It's
wow.
To protect it to not too many people to come in, but yeah, it's also
wow. Okay.
A way to, I don't know, to make it pure, I guess. And, so yeah. They only accept rich tourists.
Wow, okay.
Cool.
All right, guess they don't want me.
All right, scratching that off the list.
Yeah, but it's safe to say that they absolutely not went there to shoot the movie. I think it's for, it will be all studios and mm-hmm. CGI and yeah.
Well, speaking of filming movies and behind the scenes and how things are done, we are going to move into our next segment.
Ladies and gentlemen, please find your seats. Nomadge Movie Magic is about to begin.
So on this episode, we wanted to do a little highlight of the hair and makeup team on the Fantastic Beasts series. And specifically, someone that I wanted to talk about is Faye Hammond, who is the hair and makeup designer on the films. And she's got quite the resume of films that she has worked on. She's an Emmy Award winner. And she's worked on both of the Fantastic Beasts films, overseeing a crew of the hair and makeup artists. She's been working in film and television for over 40 years, and she's best known for her work on Fantastic Beasts, Pride and Prejudice, the 2005 version, the Elizabeth I miniseries, which she won the Emmy for, Stardust, Rush, Life of Pi, the Amazon original series Genius about Albert Einstein. And she was also nominated for an Emmy for that as well. I believe that was in 2017, 2018, around then. So both Faye Hammond and Marilyn McDonald, who was the crowd hair and makeup supervisor, were nominated for a Hollywood Makeup and Hairstylist Guild Award for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them in 2017. They didn't end up winning. Suicide Squad ended up winning that award, but they were nominated. In an interview with a Pottermore correspondent, Faye explained that she handpicked the team that worked on the Fantastic Beasts films because she says it's very intimate work. A lot of times the makeup artists are kind of that last person that the actors see before they turn back to the camera to start acting again. And so she had this quote that I wanted to read from that interview. She says, "It's a really delicate, sensitive job, makeup. My team is handpicked by me, and I have to choose them for their sensitivities, for their ability to know how to make an actor feel safe. Some days an actor will want to talk and joke, others they'll not want to say a thing. I need my team to sense that, to work around any nerves, to know when to be quiet. We're the last people they see before they turn their faces and go on camera. Sometimes they need to see you out of the corner of their eye before they can go on."
Oh, that's
so interesting.
Yeah. I'd never really like thought about this relationship before, but like, I guess it makes sense when she kind of talks about how different members of her team are assigned to work on specific actors. And one of those is Rachel Speak, I think that's how you say her name, was one of the makeup artists, and she was assigned to Allison Sudol. And Faye was kind of talking in this interview about their friendship that formed between Allison and Rachel. And she said, another quote, "Rachel's used to working with leading ladies. She's great fun and she's loyal. They struck up a fantastic relationship straight away, really. They're about the same age. They like the same music. They get on. They've got the right energy together. I can't tell you how important that is."
That's so cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. It really, because you think, okay, it's a technical job. You need to be good at doing the right makeup. But it's also really a human thing. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, acting is like pretty vulnerable, and so making sure that the last person you see before you go on like puts you in a good headspace. I think that never really thought about how that that would really affect you.
Oh, and she's right. It is a really intimate job, because think about putting on your own makeup. It's one thing to trust your own hand near your eyes or your mouth or something, but now imagine having someone else getting it. You have to really implicitly trust that person that they won't just stab you in the eye with your mascara wand like I do regularly.
And also you have to trust them to make sure that they'll make you look good and
exactly,
you know, like make you confident too, because if you don't feel like you look right, then you might not do as good of a job on the acting part.
Yeah
It's also, I guess, a person that the actors spend a lot of time with, because the other member of the crew, I think it's more distant, but some of them has to spend a lot of time with the makeup team, so that's also
I just thought it was to get along. Yeah, I thought it was really cool how she kind of talked about, you know, trying to match people up with people that they would really do well with. Yeah. I think that's just a cool awareness to have of like, you know, I'm going to put these two people together because I think they would really vibe well, as opposed to just like, here you go, you're going to work on this person.
Yeah, totally.
So obviously the first two films took place in the 1920s, which has a very specific look about it as far as hair and makeup goes. So I found this article where Faye was kind of working with a class at Solent University. I guess she came in as a guest speaker and they wrote up an article about it afterwards. But there are some interesting tidbits in that. She said, you know, working on a period piece gives a little bit more freedom than, say, a documentary. So the hair and makeup doesn't have to be completely accurate to the time period, but it has to give off those vibes and, you know, be recognizable as from that time period, but can also really take some creative liberties and have a little bit more freedom, especially when you're thinking about matching the film's aesthetic, which you think about these films, they're very like whimsy and there's magic and stuff. So of course it's not going to be completely 1920s by the book. So yeah. That's an interesting note as well.
Yeah.
And during that presentation she did for that class at the university, she told the students it takes around 8 minutes to do the makeup of each extra on set. So she was talking about, you know, how they need to move very quickly so that they don't spend too much time on any one person, because there can be so many extras wandering around in the background of some of these scenes on a film like Fantastic Beasts and other films that she's worked on. But she specifically brought up Beasts and some of those like city scenes that we have.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting.
Fascinating work that goes into things. And
I was thinking about what how her job would have been really difficult for the last movie, because of course because of the COVID rules.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the trust part must be even more important with all these COVID rules and restriction and
Definitely.
The bubble and
Totally.
Like, I've seen so many behind the scenes pictures, not of Beasts, but of other films and TV series that they had to film during COVID, and how like they're basically all suited up in masks and face shields and everything else. The actors too, right before they're about to do their take, they take it all off. And like this team of makeup artists kind of converges and quick does a touch up and runs away, and then they can film. So it's very interesting kind of how they've had to work around.
Especially now that you quoted all that she said about the importance of the relationship with the makeup artist and the human connection, and how it will feel with all this protection and burial and fear of the virus. And that should, I think that it's even more important to have really people who are really good in making other feel safe and feel comfortable with all to get around all these all these things.
Yeah.
And I since we spoke about Indiana Jones, I see in her filmography that she worked on The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also saw she worked on Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day.
I love that movie so much.
It's such a cute little souffle of a movie. It's also got that very 1920s feel, so I can tell that's this Fantastic Beasts is right in her wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is all I have for movie magic.
Thank you. It was really interesting.
Yeah, that was fantastic. That was fantastic. I hate the dice. Whenever I say that, it sounds like I'm doing a bit. But it was. You did good.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. On to the next segment, which is becoming my favorite segment that we do on this podcast, which is Kowalski's Half-Baked Theory.
Hey, Mr. English guy, I think your theory is hatching.
Welcome to Kowalski's Half-Baked Theories, where our hosts rate Fantastic Beasts theories that can range from mind-blowingly plausible to downright ridiculous. The theories that seem most likely to predict an outcome will be given a demiguise rating. Those somewhere in between will be given a blast in its fruit, of course. And the stinkers, or the downright ridiculous, will be given a flobberworm.
I ain't got the brains to make this up.
Yay! Woo!
I picked a weird one, and I'm excited about it. So this is a theory I found on the Super Carlin Brothers YouTube page a while ago. I think it was early 2020 that this theory came out. And when I first saw it, I was like, this is absolutely ridiculous. Like, this can't be true. And I'm still not 100% convinced, or even, you know, maybe 50% convinced, but I still think it's interesting, and I want to hear what you guys think. The theory is that Queenie is Snape's grandmother.
Okay.
They did, I mean, I will credit the Super Carlin Brothers on this video, because they did a lot of work to try and make this make sense. I don't know if they succeeded, but we'll figure it out. I'll go through it together. So first of all, they have a lot of things in common, which I have to admit I did not really realize before looking into this theory, but they do actually have a good amount in common, Queenie and Snape. So they're both kind of the right hand to the bad guy. We're not exactly sure how close Queenie is to Grindelwald after Crimes of Grindelwald, and switching over to his side. But, you know, Voldemort and Snape had that relationship, and now it seems like Queenie and Grindelwald are going to have that kind of relationship. They will do anything for love. Love is their most motivating factor. I guess with Snape, I would say quote-unquote love. But with Queenie, I would say real love. And they would do anything for love, including switch sides, which they both do. They are both skilled legilimens, and they are, as the Super Carlin Brothers put it, a whiz with ingredients. So, obviously, Snape is really great at potions, and Queenie seems to be a very good baker and or cook. And I don't know how much of that really has anything to do with lineage, but...
Yeah, but that's interesting. Yeah, the parallel is interesting. I will wait until the end of the development to judge the family line, but... The comparison of the two characters is really, really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really notice how much they had in common until they kind of laid it out like that. But I think the biggest argument for them being related would be the legilimency part, because we don't see a lot of people with this ability in either the Harry Potter series or the Fantastic Beasts series. It seems to be a very rare ability. And so the question then becomes, is it genetic, or does it get passed down, or is it learned? So the video goes through and, to make it seem like this could be real, it lists other rare magical abilities that can be passed down genetically. So, for example, the ability to speak parcel tongue is a genetic ability that's not learned. because Voldemort locks the Chamber of Secrets with Parseltongue, knowing that only his heir would be able to open it, or someone who spoke Parseltongue in the future. And then, like, Metamorphagi, or Metamorph Magi, I don't exactly know how you say it, that ability can only be passed down, can't be learned. Tonks passes it down to Teddy. It's not something that you can, it's not like being an animagus where you can, like, learn to do it. And then divination seems to be passed down. We know that Trelawney gets her divination powers, her seer powers, from her great-great-grandmother Cassandra. And it does, like, if you don't have, like, a ability for it, you're probably not going to do very well. So those are kind of samples of other things that have to be passed down. And it's possible that while we do see in the Harry Potter series, at least, like, Snape tries to teach Harry Occlumency, like, there are parts of it that can be learned. Snape seems to be, like, very, very good at it, like, probably the best at it that we see in the entire series, including Voldemort and Dumbledore. He's better than both of them. So it's probable that he has some sort of natural ability rather than just being taught it. And Queenie also seems to be naturally born with it. She makes a comment in the first movie, I believe, where, you know, she talks about how she, like, she's always heard what men think of her when they see her, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Something like that.
She says, like, oh, lots of guys think about me what you was thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of, like, implying that she's been dealing with this for a very long time.
Yeah. Hmm.
And she's pretty young. In Crimes of Grindelwald, I think she's, like, 24. I get to it here later in this segment, but she was born in, like, 1903. So she's pretty young, and so for her to have this much of an ability of Ligilimency, she probably was born with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure she's born with it, and it's also something that she can't control.
Mm-hmm.
She can't... actually, she doesn't know Occlumency, I think, because if she was taught Occlumency, maybe she could control a bit more her own legitimacy, I guess. I'm not sure it works like that, but...
maybe, yeah.
I guess it could, yeah, it could help to learn Occlumency when you have this ability, this natural ability that you can't block.
Mm-hmm.
And... but I don't know about Snape. I think it's learned from his part.
Yeah, just looking through the wiki, it seems most people refer to it as an art, that there mm-hmm. is some kind of talent to it. Like you need some kind of innate ability to do so, but then you can train yourself up to be very good at it. Like, Queenie to me comes off as more of a... I mean, I realize that we're kind of splitting hairs, but that's what this podcast is about.
Right.
Like, she seems like more of a telepath than a Legilimens. A Legilimens seems like more of a science, and a telepath... Telepathy is more of a... just something innate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like Queenie is also one of a kind, because I vaguely remember that in the script of the first movie, there is... something when Newt meet Queenie and he thinks something like that's the first time he meets somebody like that who has this natural legitimacy and filter and ability that is she didn't mean to look into others' minds. She just hear everything. So
yeah, like I think that's an interesting difference, because what we see with Snape and even Voldemort, it's like very intentional of I'm going to read your mind now. And with Queenie, it just kind of like happens.
Well, I feel like Queenie, you know, she was born with these powers and just never learned how to control them properly.
Yeah.
Whereas Snape could have also been born with these powers but just learned how to control them properly, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
I don't know. J.K. Rowling did addressed this on Twitter back in 2016 very briefly, where someone wrote to her saying, Snape says the mind isn't a book to read at leisure, but Queenie seemed to do just that. I would love to know more about Legilimency. And the author wrote back saying, Snape had to train a slight natural ability. Queenie was born with a great talent, though she is not infallible.
Okay.
So not exactly sure like what she's 100% saying there, but it does sound like Queenie is a natural born talent, while Snape might have been born with like an affinity towards it, but needed to like train it up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it looks like Snape had the right type of mind to be good at it, but he still had to learn it. And Queenie just has this, for Queenie, it's exactly like Metamorphogai or Metamorpho. I don't know how you pronounce it. it's the same kind of abilities that Tonks or Teddy has. born, they are born with it, and when they are children, they don't quite control it, and they learn after to control it. And for Queenie, maybe she's the only one who has this type of ability, so nobody knows how to train her to control it. But yeah, that's and again, I think Snape, his thing is occlumency. He's exceptionally good at occlumency, and legitimacy, I think he knows really well legitimacy, but that's more occlumency that he is good at.
Right.
Am I misremembering? He had to use a spell to get into Harry's head, right?
Sometimes. Yeah, I think he doesn't always, because there are examples throughout the series where we, even back all the way in Philosopher's Sorcerer's Stone, where they make remarks about how Snape, it's like Snape can read Harry's mind.
Oh, that's true.
Then there's at least one reference to it in almost every book. And so I think that he can read people's minds, and he doesn't always need to use a spell. But I think it also might have been a movieism, because he does, like, the spell is Legilimens, I think.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
think it might just be, like, to, you know, show that that's what he's doing, rather, because if it was just a scene of him literally just standing there staring at Harry, that would be boring.
And very awkward.
Yeah, so like having him say a spell and point his wand at him, like, that's, you know, more visual medium. But yeah, I don't know. I think, I mean, if anyone, Snape seems to be very, very good at it. So even if he wasn't born with a natural talent and he was just born with an affinity, it would make sense that he was then somehow related to Queenie then, because she could have passed it on, at least the affinity towards it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, if she is his grandmother, then, like, they have to be related somehow. And I'm going to explain how that could possibly maybe be a thing. So we know from the Harry Potter series that Snape's dad was a muggle, and his mom was the one that was the magical one. And so, therefore, if Queenie is related to Snape and is his grandmother, then it would have to be Queenie's daughter who would be Snape's mother to keep the magic thing in line. So we do know about Snape's mother. Snape's mother's name is Eileen Prince, and this poses some issues because neither Queenie nor Jacob's last name is Prince. But there were possible explanations for this in the video, so I will go through them. As we can tell, there's a lot of stretching here, but just stick with me. So in order for this to make sense, either she there are a couple of options. She could either not marry Jacob and marry someone else whose last name is Prince and take his name. That's a possibility. Although we as Fantastic Beasts fans don't want to believe in that possibility.
Sad.
So let's try not to think that that's the real possibility. But alternatively, Jacob and Queenie could get married and then have just changed their last name. And there actually are some good arguments for why they would have changed their last name. Well, you know, decent arguments. So one of them is that obviously the story is about to go into World War II. We're, like, heading in that direction. And both Goldstein and Kowalski are considered pretty Jewish last names. So it's very possible that maybe they changed their name to hide from the Nazis, not be persecuted during World War II. I'm pretty sure that this was actually a pretty common thing that happened back in Europe in the day.
Yeah.
Alternatively, they could have changed their names, the last name, to hide their identity because their marriage is illegal in America. We talk about this in the second movie when Jacob, like, is telling her she would go to jail, and Rappaport's law fully makes it so they are not allowed to get married if they want to live in America. So in order to do so, or even if they wanted to just get married and not be, you know, persecuted by the American, you know, magical law enforcement in any way, even if they're not living in America, they could change their last name to hide their identity so that they can get married.
Also, like, not to be a downer, but another possible theory is that either Queenie and Jacob don't survive, and so the child goes into the system and ends up with a family whose name is Prince.
Yep.
Or Jacob's not necessarily the father, and Queenie doesn't want to be involved in its life.
Possible.
So, again, it ends up with a family named Prince.
Huh.
Those are
again, not to be a downer, but those are also some options if we want to step out of the child born in what I want it to be Queenie and Jacob's baby, trust me.
Yes
But
yeah, so as we know, in the sixth Harry Potter book, Snape goes by the nickname Half-Blood Prince, mostly because his mother's maiden name is Prince, but also because, like, Prince is a cool nickname, right? And it makes you sound important because it's royalty. And this one I thought was kind of stupid but kind of fun. Who would be a grandmother of a prince? a queen, queenie, queen, prince.
Love it.
That was kind of a cute little...
Yeah, it was when you talked about maybe Jacob and Queenie chose the name Prince, I was, why Prince? And I was thinking, okay, maybe linked to Queenie, and maybe Queenie consider, oh, but Jacob, you are, if I'm the queen, you are my prince, so we should choose.
Yeah, it's cute. I like the connection. I don't know if it's like, you know, anything substantial, but it's adorable. It's cool. And also timelines are important. So I mentioned Queenie is born on June 6th, 1903. And so she's 24 during the timeline of Crimes Grindelwald, which takes place in 1927. And the best guess, based on lots of like random math and significant events in the books that I'm not going to get into because it was very convoluted and I don't really want to explain, is that Eileen Prince was probably born around 1931. I tried to look this up to verify, and the wiki does say that she was born in 1930. I don't know what their source was. But if this is true, that gives about 3 years between the events of Crimes of Grindelwald before Eileen Prince would have had to been born. So it's very possible that in the next 3 years, Queenie has a baby. I don't see why not. So that's just something to keep in mind. Of course, if the next movie it has a big time jump and she doesn't have a baby and it's past 1930, then it's probably gonna fall through. But we don't know. Maybe she'll have a baby in the next movie. I don't know.
Maybe she'll just show up at the beginning of the next movie just heavily pregnant.
Maybe. I mean, wasn't Alison Siddall like pregnant at one point during filming? Or no?
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe they'll play it into the plot somehow. But yeah, in the end, so basically I think the main thing that this theory stands on is that they have a lot of similarities as characters. So, as I mentioned before, they're both deeply motivated by love. Queenie makes some ridiculous decisions based just on love, as we see in Crimes Grindelwald, both at the beginning and at the end. She, you know, tries to, I don't know, put Jacob under that spell to control him at the beginning because she wants them to be in love and be married or whatever. And then at the end, she chooses to side with a wizard, Hitler, because of love. I mean, both of these decisions are because she loves Jacob and she wants to try and make it work somehow. How misguided that is, I mean, is in question. But, and obviously we see that they both switch sides because of love. So obviously, like, Snape was a Death Eater and switches over to Dumbledore's side and the side of good to avenge Lily's death. And Queenie is switching over to Grindelwald's side to try and do something to make it so that her and Jacob can be together. So their stories do have a lot of parallels.
Yeah.
There was one comment on the video that I found interesting that I wanted to bring up. And so this person said, Queenie is already pregnant when she joins with Grindy and still ends up dying before the end of the series. Jacob changes his name to Prince in homage to Queenie and raises little Eileen alone, but stays in England to be close to Newt and Tina because he's scared of what could happen to his half-blood daughter in the United States. Being a muggle, he lives in a muggle area that can explain why Eileen marries a muggle, and she's lived amongst them until she was 17. So.
The beginning of this story is really sad.
Yeah, I'm still not convinced.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also have a lot of doubt that maybe Queenie was pregnant during Crimes of Grindelwald, and maybe we will see a child in the next movie and understand later that it's Jacob's child. But but I don't like the part where Queenie die. And
I mean, it's possible she might not make it through the series, but I mean, it's
I know.
It's a stretch. I mean, so that's basically, I have one more note, and it has nothing to do with this actual theory, so I can get to it after I ask this question. But I'm guessing from what I'm gathering, no one was convinced after this. Is that correct?
I like it, but like, there's a lot of hoops it has to jump through to get where it needs to be.
I feel like it's very pessimistic of me, but I would have to give it a flopper worm just because I'm just like, yeah, no.
I don't know what it will add to either Queenie or Snape to have this connection, because I don't think I like the comparison between the two characters, but I like that comparison alone. I don't need them to be related to explore that and to see how these two characters have similar plot point and at the same time make different decision at some point. But
I think the tipping point for a lot of people that believe in this theory is like, so like, yeah, the comparison is really interesting. Just the fact of, you know, their motivations, switching sides, being, you know, possibly being double agents, whatever it is. Like, those comparisons alone are super strong and really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think the tipping point is the legitimacy. Because
that's true.
Then it is, and like, then it's like they have too much in common, you know? Like, then they're basically the same character, right?
Yeah,
like,
but I don't get the legitimacy connection, because I really think that's two very different things for Snape and for Queenie. But
But
I get the argument, and I get why it stimulates the the theory crafting minds.
I'm not convinced still. I still think it's a pretty ridiculous theory in general, but I do think that it does have some legs to stand on. There are some really cool coincidences that I wasn't expecting when I watched this for the first time. I love the Queen Prince thing. I think it's cute. But yeah, I would say Flobberworm overall.
But what does it make Quentin Kowalski? Because we know that there is a Quentin Kowalski, so
Kowalski, I think, is a pretty Polish, like, standard Polish name, too. So.
There's also an Anthony Quentin Goldstein Queenie, at Hogwarts.
True. Quentin Queenie, it sounds similar. It's not Queenie Prince, but it's still a connection in the name, so...
Yeah, I guess we'll see. Maybe Quentin is Eileen's brother. I don't know.
Everybody's related.
This is exactly what we need. We definitely need everyone to have a connection to somebody in the Potter series.
No, yeah. I mean, I think that it's people just want them to be, you know, connected somehow, the two stories, and this is probably their way of doing it. But yeah, I had one other note, and this didn't have anything to do with Queenie being related to Snape, but I did find it interesting they brought it up in the video, so I wanted to make sure that I brought it up, because maybe there are thoughts on this. But we see at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald that Queenie walks through Grindelwald's blue flames. And I think, like, in the movie, it's like the fact that she survives it means that she's, like, loyal to him, right? Am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah.
Well, the people in this video brought up the fact that walking through these blue flames could have, like, you know, signed her, like, put her under some sort of binding magical contract towards Grindelwald, because the only other time, or maybe not the only other time, but the other significant time that we see blue flames in the series, in, you know, this Harry Potter universe, the Wizarding World universe, is in Goblet of Fire, because the Goblet of Fire spits out blue flames, which, when it does so, it also includes a binding magical contract to, you have to participate in the Triwizard Tournament.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah. So blue flames, magical contract. It's possible that anybody who walked through the blue flames at the Colosseum and proved their loyalty to Grindelwald might have also somehow walked into some sort of binding magical contract. That was just something they brought up on the video that I thought was an interesting thought starter.
Yeah. Huh. The flame was supposed to be black in the script, I remember. But either way, it's still flame that you go through, so that's... Mm-hmm. That's
the color, I feel like, maybe isn't the important part, but mm-hmm. the fact that we know that it's charmed, and mm-hmm. I feel like we wasn't there blue fire at the Death Day party?
Maybe. I don't remember. The only, I do remember, like, Hermione has, like, this thing that she can make.
Oh, the blue bell flames.
Yeah. So I don't know, I can't remember if those flames are actually blue, but they're called blue bell flames. But, like, that doesn't have anything to do with magical contracts, so maybe it's a wash.
The two times that we see distinctly charmed fire, though.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, that's a really good point.
So, yeah, that's all. That was my Kowalski's half-baked theory, and it was actually about Kowalski this time, sort of.
Love it. Thank you.
So for the podcast question this week that we teased earlier in the episode, we want to know what kind of adventure you want for Newt in Bhutan. So we'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl. We missed the owl, so please. And you can use any of our social media outlets, or you can even email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And you also can leave a review on Apple Podcast. We love reviews, except a bad one, but yeah, please send us good reviews.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBC, Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie. The Tumblr is quiet but still going and still quality at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com for the six of you, including me, who still use Tumblr. And you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie. There are cool stickers that go out every month, and a little bit of inside baseball knowledge here. We recently reached out to a new artist who is going to be creating some new stickers. They are going to be super rad. So if that's something that you are interested in, check it out. And we are also constantly producing hashtag content for the patrons. I'm planning on doing some kind of Theseus-related content where I just talk about how dreamy he is and his beautiful eyes for a little bit. Anything else coming up cool for y'all?
I visited the New York store, the Harry Potter New York store, and some of the content has already been posted, but I think there's still more scheduled to come on Patreon. So I saw a lot of really cool Fantastic Beasts and Makuza merch and stuff like that nice. At the store. So it's a fun time. If you haven't been to New York, check it out.
Yeah, and we've got all of Marjo's excellent adventure coming up.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So excited to see that.
It's
been so cool.
Yeah, I'm even because I have so many photos and different things because I did a lot of different things. I visited several exhibition. I went to the Forbidden Forest experience, and I met Oreo, of course. And actually, I'm thinking about even doing an advent calendar, but I'm not sure yet. Ooh. If I have the time.
Oh, that's a good idea. Fun. That's such a fun idea, like an advent calendar unboxing for Patreon. That's cute. I like that.
Yeah, I still don't know how I will do that, but when this episode will come out, it's very close to the beginning of December, so you will see if I go through this idea or if you will just have regular but still really cool post on Patreon about my trip. But definitely it will come in December, so keep an eye on that.
That wraps it up, so thanks everyone for listening. And I'm Anne.
I'm Amy.
I'm Lynn.
And I'm Marjolaine. Case closed.